sponsors. Welcome to Wynn Tucson, a new voice and a different point of view. Here, it's about issues, not politics. Treat her like a lady after she's given to you. Here's your host, Kathleen Wynn.
Welcome to this Wednesday edition, and I told you yesterday we're going to be talking about energy and power and the people that manage that and control that in our state, and that is our Arizona Corporation Commission. And there are three seats available. There are five members on this board, so this election will determine who controls our energy. And my first guest is a lifelong Arizonan. She went to ASU, we won't hold that against her, Pima County, for her bachelor's degree and got her graduate degree there. She's had a 14-year career in financial services, so she understands money, on the regulatory side of the industry. Rachel Walden is a precinct committeeman, a state committeeman. She also serves on the member of a governing board of Mesa Public Schools, and Mesa Public Schools is the largest district in the state. She has prioritized academic achievement, parental rights, fiscal responsibility, and transparency. And the school board jobs are some of the hardest that we have. So, Rachel, welcome to Wynn Tucson, and thank you for being here today.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
So, again, I'm a Wildcat, so you have me on everything, and I'll even forgive the ASU thing, because you're such a smart girl.
Yeah, oh, thank you. I didn't leave ASU on good terms, though, so that's okay if you want to you know, knock ASU around. And, you know, our legislature is pretty mad that they just up and closed the Lake Havasu campus without any warning or discussion. So they're in the bad corner right now.
Well, good. If you're willing to call them out, then I'm willing to, then we've got, that's great. See, you've already sold yourself to the people of Pima County. They like it that you're going to call out the call out those Sun Devils.
Yeah.
School board to Arizona Corporation Commission. I know you, I know your background, but explain to the listeners why you felt that at this time in the state that this was a good transition for you.
Sure. And I am going to stay on the board because it's unpaid. It's about 10 hours a week. So I'm going to keep the fight in education. The two biggest places where the left is coming after us and trying to fundamentally transform what this nation is in education and then in the sustainability agenda. And that sustainability agenda is all over education. Every lesson, history, social studies, math, they tie in the climate change models and the narratives, you know, talk about those things without bias, but they have one agenda in all of the lesson planning and the curriculum that we're seeing with this sort of global government sustainability model. So the commission, a lot of people want the commission to be a fourth branch of government, but the commissioners that are on there talk to me about running because they need people that will stand up to lobbyists and stand up to the Green New Deal, which is hard to do because the news and stuff will paint you as some kind of science denier, right? And that's not the issue. We're not saying that the Earth doesn't do what it's going to do, but we're saying we don't have to change what we're doing to survive in the 21st century because of it. So the people that come into the commission, especially like the Democrats that are running right now, they want it to be a fourth branch of government, or they want the commission to write policies and laws.
And that's the job of the legislature, correct?
That's the job of the legislature. Yeah, absolutely. The commission, according to the Arizona Constitution, is a regulatory body to be a check and a balance on monopolies and ensure that Arizonans pay a just and reasonable rate for their services. So we're there on the financial side, on the money side of it, and making sure that we're getting the best deal that we can get given what's going on in the market. So, you know, I think for me, it's another battleground. I'm just taking the fight statewide.
So fundamentally, you understand the job, which is to write that you're a regulator. You have financial background. Those that you're running against, other than wanting to totally change what the job is, do you differ on your energy policies?
Yeah, we do. Because, you know, like, me and the other Republican candidates, Renee Lopez and Leah Marquez Peterson, you know, we're saying that we have to step aside and allow all options of energy to be considered. So the criteria is that we find energy generation at the most affordable rate, but that's also going to be reliable and safe. So we're looking at cost, safety, reliability. So cost is really important, but of course we need the lights to come on and the air conditioning to come on when we need it to. Our opponents are saying that we have to move to 100% portfolio green energy sector. They want to make everything solar and wind. And we have renewables in Arizona, and we're going to continue to see a build out of renewables, but we still have to have the natural gas peaker plants to get us to the peak demand. We have Palo Verde, we have hydroelectric, we have all these other sources of energy, and we shouldn't limit our options because, you know, we don't know what the market's going to do. Energy is traded like the stock market with same day pricing. So they're paying your rates when you get your bill. I mean, they can change depending on what they got the pricing for. So, you know, cost savings are passed down immediately. Things that cost more are passed down immediately. So we have to hedge against changing conditions and supply and demand issues, especially we saw with natural gas. There were big supply and demand issues after Winter Storm Uri, and there was a pipeline explosion. So if you're just relying on one thing, you're going to end up with blackouts. So we want to have multiple options. But the thing about renewables is they haven't solved, nobody has solved the timing problem or what to do that if it's intermittent, right? So, you know, the sun doesn't
always blow.
Yeah, but the demand for energy is at an all-time high, and the demand for energy continues to grow as more people are buying electric cars and charging electric cars. The chip manufacturing, the other manufacturing, the data centers, the AI center. So the demand is so high for energy. Renewables cannot meet that demand. They have to have other sources. Even if you're using your solar during the day, when peak time comes between 4 and 6 p.m., the solar is not producing anymore. You have to have other sources of energy to get through the peak demand. Now, a lot of people talk about, oh, it's easy, you just buy battery storage. Well, once you add storage to it, it's the same price as coal. So it's no longer your cheapest option. The coal is going to be your cheaper option. You're just basically using solar and batteries. That's the same cost of coal. You're just trading reliable baseload for unreliable baseload.
And I'm going to make an educated guess here that you're for coal and your opponents are against coal.
Well, yes. And the thing is, with our coal plants in America, we put catalytic reduction equipment on them so that there's no haze or anything coming out of them. The technology exists. You know, it costs more money, but the technology exists that the intake and that the air intake into coal can make the outtake cleaner than the air it took in. Like if you had a coal plant in a really polluted place like L.A. County and they have all the pollution, the air that came out would be cleaner than the air that came in. That technology exists. So, you know, I'm not convinced that coal is causing the damage that people think it's causing. But, you know, how is mining for coal supposed to be more harmful to the environment than mining for lithium, nickel, the things that they have to mine for the rare earth minerals, for the batteries and for the solar panels, right? So, I mean, we want to be good stewards of the environment, absolutely. But both of those things involve taking something out of the earth. And in fact, solar panels in creating like electric cars is a global process. So you're shipping materials all around the world in cargo ships and, you know, things that are using fuel just to get that green energy. And then, the manufacturing for the panels, a lot of it's done in China, or they're building 300 more coal plants.
Exactly.
Because they don't have clean coal. They're not going to put that equipment on their coal plants to make the air clean.
So, Rachel, we have to take a quick break. And we come back, I want to pick up right where we are, because I think it's important for people to understand the cost, the regulation, and why these three seats are so important. We are talking to Rachel Walden, candidate for the Arizona Corporation Commission. You are listening to her on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. I'm Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson. Stay with us. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. Our special guest this first half hour is Rachel Walden. Rachel is running for Corporation Commission with Liam Marquez Peterson, who's from Pima County, and Renee Lopez, who will be joining us at the bottom of this hour. So, Rachel, there seems to be people want something until they see the cost of it, or they see that doesn't work. I had someone just send me an article, and I'd like to get your input on this about AI demand spurs big tech scramble for clean energy. So the article starts out, tech giants swore just a few years ago that they would slash their carbon emissions. Then they got swept up in the artificial intelligent mania. So now they have a problem. So how often does that happen? And why is it so important that the Corporation Commission be the neutral party, if you will, regulating our energy?
Sure. Well, everyone needs to pay their fair share. So the person who's benefiting from the project is the one that needs to pay. So if, you know, some data center comes in and they say, we want to run our data center, we want to be able to use solar and batteries and all that, sure, but you do have to pay for it. Like, we're not going to pass it on to the
consumers,
residential rate payers. Yeah, they have, there's industrial rates, but they're talking about this in Ohio because some of those big companies in Ohio, they're telling them they have to pay to harden the grid because solar does put a strain on the grid and causes some changes there. And they're saying they're not going to pay for it. They're saying we're not going to pay for the grid. Well, you have to pay for the grid. I don't think they're going to win that in Ohio, and they're not going to win that here because solar doesn't dispatch evenly to the grid. So the grid was all designed around a 60 hertz dispatch. Sorry, I'm getting too technical. But basically, it's because it's intermittent. You don't have an even dispatch to the grid. You can get hiccups in your power. And so while the tech companies are saying, well, we're slashing our emissions by doing solar, in reality, they're still going to be pulling from other energy sources. And even if they build solar, it doesn't mean that their energy is going to come from the solar, because energy follows the path of least resistance. So like in Mesa, we have, you know, one of our data centers that's closer to a different source of energy. So yeah, they pay to have some solar, but a lot of times the energy that they're getting isn't from the solar. You know, the trading centers for the energy, they're just, you know, helping decide what sources to pull from, you know, based on cost and availability. So it does change and fluctuate, but that's fine if they want to pay to build more renewables. But, you know, the grid is an important factor in that cost too. And we should never be passing that on to the residential rate payer.
I totally agree. And what about you, before we went to the break, you talked about China and we are kind of in a unfriendly relationship with China right now. So how, if we rely on them and we rely on them for products and we rely on them for our energy, is that a sound fiscal response? You know, are you being fiscally responsible to rely on somebody that could pull it back and then leave us without energy?
Yeah, I think so. I think if we're going to try to just, you know, if we were to say we're going to go solar and wind and nothing else, I mean, we're not going to meet energy demand. We'll be having blackouts and major problems there. But even getting supplies and materials to replace broken equipment, or we saw a hailstorm that damaged a bunch of solar panels. If there's no place to buy those solar panels because we're in some kind of embargo, then yeah, you're going to be and have big problems. Now there is solar manufacturing in the U.S. There are some panels that are manufactured here too. It's just that the bulk of it has come from China. Now they put a tariff. Biden-Harris put a tariff on the China solar panels as well. So yeah, I mean that the relationship and availability of things fluctuates. But in order to even create solar and wind, even if we're manufacturing those panels or turbines here, the materials is a global process, and a lot of that mining's happening in Africa. So we are relying on multiple countries to get all the different components that go into that. Whereas if we do coal or natural gas, that's all within the U.S., right? So we're keeping it all within the same country. So we're not going to be subject to issues with war and those countries' price changes. So I think it's definitely more stable when, you know, America is
relying on
energy independent.
Own. Yes.
Yeah.
I think energy independence is a big thing. And although it has been kind of pushed aside during this presidential election, I think that there's clearly two separate policies being laid out by both parties. And I think one of us makes us energy independent and the other does not.
Yeah, I agree. And if you, so Congressman Biggs, I was talking to him because they said, I read in the news that under Biden-Harris that the price of electricity has gone up 25%. And he said, yes, but that's adjusted for inflation. If you don't adjust it for inflation in the last 4 years, electricity has gone up 45% because they're closing pipelines. They're not leasing federal lands for fracking and for natural gas. Natural gas is America's number one energy source. It's about 40% of all energy in America. If you think about, I mentioned the supply and demand issues and pricing changes, when the federal government can come and say, we're going to shut these lands down, we're going to have big issues. So they're actually trying to push us into renewables with their green policies. And it's part of Biden's 2050 executive order to be emission free, which is impossible. Net zero is impossible. It's everything emits carbon. We emit carbon as people, right? You can't truly have a net zero. And so, but they know that, and they know that. So the only way to achieve net zero is you have to pay for it.
Or get rid of all the people, Rachel, which on some days you think...
Oh, there's that too that you wonder about.
I mean, I hate to be so dark on a Wednesday, but I mean, honestly, a lot of things they say, they tell you where they're headed. And we don't listen. We think, oh, that's just too bizarre. That's too crazy. But we are watching in real time them say they want to get something done and then... I don't think anybody's, if you went back in time 4 years ago and you told people what would be happening right now, they would have said you're crazy. That's bizarre. Or to steal a word, that's weird. But at this moment in time, Americans really need to protect the basic things that run our energy, that run our lives. And I think it's very concerning to people that they can't afford any more costs going up. They can't afford to have a home, especially for young people wanting to buy a home. All of these things matter. So as a regulatory agency, what can you do when elected to influence price? Can you do anything?
So we have the integrated resource plans. That's the blueprint for the energy build out. And so the commission requires that the utility companies get a bid for all sources of generation. And there's about 40 options out there. So they're getting bids. So when we review that blueprint every couple of years, it's called the integrated resource plan. Then the commission can make sure and go through all of the data from the request for proposals and see which is going to be the most affordable option that's also reliable. And then we can help cut costs for the ratepayer by repealing government mandates that have been placed on the utilities. The utility companies, because of the commission, have been forced into building out renewable. They've been forced into, and one of the APS was with a solar company, the commission mandated a contract, and they mandated a 30-year contract. There's contracts that should have only been 3 years that the commission mandated to be 12 years. And that's too long because pricing changes. And so you never want to lock anybody into any vendor for longer than a couple of years. Because of that, after 3 years, it may not be the right option anymore. And then the subsidies that go into the rates. So, you know, the current commission, they cut with Tucson Electric Power. There was a tree subsidy. There were electric vehicle charging stations, like different things that whenever the utility offers a free program, that free program goes into your rate. So the cost to run that program gets socialized amongst all the ratepayers, whether they use the program or not. And that's why I'm opposed to subsidies and why the current commission is opposed to subsidies. Like, yeah, it's a good idea to plant shade trees, but the trees they were buying were just tiny saplings. It's going to be 20 years before they provided any shade. But I mean, if you think your house needs a shade tree, that's not the government's issue. You should go out and get a tree and plant a shade tree if that works best for you. I shouldn't have to pay for it.
Exactly. I 100% agree. And we don't want the second governments involved to try to solve those kinds of problems. We're losing. We don't have what we need. Here's a question for you. We talk about solar, and I've heard about solar panels, and I've heard about pollution from solar. Who regulates that? Does that get regulated? The things that solar puts out that need to be replaced? Because I'm hearing that they're there's some things that can't be taken away. I don't know if I'm making sense, but
yeah, no, there's concerns about farmland. Like in Italy, they wrote laws so that you can't put solar panels on or near farmlands to protect that, because it can, from what I've read, is that it can cause problems with the soil. There are companies now in the U.S. that are trying to work on solar panel recycling, because that's a big concern. The EPA is the one that's the big regulatory body over all of this, but their reach is so huge, and a lot of the prices that have gone up over the years is because of the EPA regulations, where it costs so much money to implement their rules, like the Clean Air Act. That one was Congress, but those, you know, whenever the government puts its hand in the private sector, they end up increasing costs and prices that we all pay for. Like,
yes,
the regular taxpayer has to bear the brunt of all of it. So we don't want to have those mandates. But the solar panels, like U of A, so you brought up U of A, they're trying to figure out stuff that they can grow. I forgot the word for it. It's a big fancy technical word about basically solar farming, where you can plant stuff under the solar panels. So far, the only things that they find that can grow under the solar panels is cilantro and peppers.
I love cilantro.
Really gonna, yeah, but it's not going to feed everybody.
No, so, I get. I'm just,
you know,
being funny.
We could make salsa.
Yeah,
ingredients for salsa. They haven't been able to figure out how much farming can really be done. It you know, solar panels in a field provided natural shade protection.
Yes,
that can help some plants, but I don't know. I feel like that if my food was grown under a solar panel, I'd just be eating something that was radiated.
Yeah, there's that too. So we are down to our last minute. How do people, if they want to know more about Rachel Walden, where should they go to find you and see your platform?
Thank you for that question. It's electrachelwalden.com, and you can learn a lot about me there. My priorities and where I stand on some of the different issues that we're hearing about and how to fix them.
And R-A-C-H-E-L, correct?
Correct. And then Walden, like the pond in Massachusetts, W-A-L-D-E-N.
Okay. So electrachelwalden.com. And we're going to have your running mate, Renee Lopez, come on. And I want to remind people, you can vote for three. So you can vote for Leah Marquez Peterson again. You can, but please vote for Rachel and please vote for Renee. Use all three votes so we don't get someone on there that doesn't agree with our views. Rachel, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This is Kathleen Wynn, Wynn Tucson. We'll be back right after this with Renee Lopez. Stay with us. Welcome back. And we are talking energy and the Arizona Corporation Commission. And our next candidate, Renee Lopez. I'm going to just do this from memory. I believe that you are a U of A Wildcat. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay, fair good. And Rachel wasn't really excited about ASU right now because they're not doing the things that they need to do. So Renee also served on the Chandler City Council. And Renee, let my listeners know your background is almost a perfect match for what this job would be. So would you let them know how smart you are?
Thank you, Kathleen. So I just have a history of service. We've known each other due to our nonprofit work. But
yes.
So brief background, I'm a third-generation Arizona native and a third-generation Navy veteran. My parents are from Douglas, a border town down southern Arizona. And I was born and raised in Mesa. I went to Dobson High, graduated from there, and went to Mesa Community College for the first couple of years. And that's where I discovered my first love language, which was energy. So I wound up changing my degree to nuclear engineering. And at the time, U of A was the only university that had that degree. So I went down to the University of Arizona to get my degree, and the Navy put me on scholarship. It helped me pay for my college. And got my commission in the Navy and obtained my Bachelor of Science in Nuclear Engineering with a minor in Direct Energy Conversion. So served the Navy my 4 years, 8 months, and started off in the new community, but did special operations on submarines. But when I left the Navy, came back home, but God had different plans for what my wife and I thought we'd finish, you know, being around our family. But wound up getting a really good job offer in San Diego, working for an oil and gas company called Solar Turbines. So not solar power turbines, they're gas turbines, but they do power generation, gas compression for oil and gas companies out of San Diego. So we lived in San Diego for about 5 years when like most people do, and leaving in California. I looked around in 2006 and, yeah, this place has gone crazy. Actually came back here with my wife now of 27 years and our two children to finish raising them. And we have, been here ever since, landed by Providence and Chandler, and wanted to continue my service. And again, seeing what had happened in California, I got involved because I did not want the Californication of Arizona.
Yes.
So got involved in politics and sort of, like you said, served on Chandler City Council for 8 years, started a nonprofit, co-founded CC's Hope Center. We help young women rescued from sex trafficking.
Yes.
From all around the state of Arizona, where our paths have crossed very often.
Yes. Thank you for that work.
Yes, thank you. And termed out in January of 23, but looked around and continued to want to serve. As I served through the Catholic Church, I served my community in politics. I looked around and, given my background, nuclear engineering, oil and gas, I worked in water, discovered my second love language while on the AMWA, which is the Arizona Municipal Water Users Association, representing Chandler there for 6 years, running the fourth largest water district in the state out of Chandler. I discovered, water and energy really go hand in hand in this state, and how important water is, of course, to our desert lifestyle. And I looked around, and the Arizona Corporation Commission overseeing energy and water and, all of the stuff that we do touch. I was kind of built for it. And, something I always wanted to do once I discovered it back, 20, 30 years ago or 25 years ago when I first discovered the ACC, it was something that I kind of strived to always go and work towards.
Yes.
And now happens to be the time.
I think it's great. And there are three seats open, and there are three conservatives running, three Republicans. And Leah Mark Has Peterson is currently serving. Is this going to be her second term? Is that, or third?
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
Second.
Yeah,
second.
She got appointed to fill... Commissioner Tobin, when he got selected to serve under Doug Ducey. So she actually did get appointed beforehand, and then she had a run within like a year for her first term. And then, so this is her second term, and you have a two-term limit, so this would be her last run on it.
And Kevin, oh my goodness.
Thompson, yep.
Thompson, thank sure. you. Oh my gosh. I know. I hope he isn't hearing this. Kevin Thompson and Nick Myers are currently serving, and Jim O'Connor's retiring. So I think we have an opportunity for the next 4 years to have the majority at a critical time, because we don't know how the presidential election is going to turn out. I think very different Americas depending on what happens on November 5th.
Oh, yeah.
But why? I think as we look at that and we look at what's going on in California, can you insulate Arizona from insulate Arizona from California's policies? Because it seems like we get things from them and they're raising the cost of our energy from where I sit.
Yes, no, it is a multi-pronged approach in order for us to prevent, as I coined the phrase, the Californication of Arizona. So it's a combination. So the federal level, yes, they do have certain reaches in, and they can stick their finger in our business often. But there are a few rulings already that came out. I think it was the Chevron case that went into the Supreme Court that basically said, if they're going to, if they edict policies and stuff, they have to go through congressional approval. And so there are some limitations that, EPA can have over us. And then the other pronged approach is, again, a lot of the Californians that are coming over, a lot of the propositions that, the energy wannabes, Tom Steyer many years ago tried to, infiltrate through the proposition process, mandating clean energy for his solar company, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, we need to be very vigilant as Arizonans to, again, be very careful of all of those different, again, multi-pronged approaches they can do to interfere, to prevent what's going on in California, as you mentioned. The policies, Kevin and Nick that are on the current commissioners, good guys. And there's been evolution ever since also Jim O'Connor and Leah wound up getting on board. We've seen the rollback. I think you may have talked about the rest rules that got rolled back, which is a requirement for basically solar tariffs that wound up forcing and mandating a lot of solar panels in Arizona. Mm. But rolling a lot of that back has led to, in the last few years, that was just released in Walla Hub, that Arizona is the 49th cheapest energy cost of the country. So 49th cheapest. And we're right next door to the second most expensive. And so policies do matter.
Yes.
And again, that's, you know, what we will continue to fight for. And like you said, the three of us, Rachel Walden, Leah Marquez Peterson, and myself, getting on that board, it kind of cinches us this conservative and, again, hold back those California policies for the next 4 years. We'll be able to do that.
Well, and I think, you know, at a time when inflation is so high and the cost of living is off the charts, knowing that your energy can that there's some hope, you have to be strategic. And people get their ballots and they have no idea about the impact of a regulatory agency on their everyday household.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And so
oh,
yeah. So if you're someone and you're looking at this, do you believe that your policies, based on who you're running against, would be a better consumer fit for people that don't want their energy to cost more?
Yes, yes. So, again, I know you just talked with Ms. Walden earlier, and, you know, we are running on our slate, Leah, Rachel, and myself, as kind of an all-above approach. We are talking about this, you know, the RFP process of being an all-above approach process, because we need it all. And if any of your listeners have heard me on the campaign trail, it's kind of repeat, but it's what I live by. Is like, we don't know where advancements in technology are going to come from. We don't know where the price of oil and gas, you know, being a major contributor into our peaker plants. Mm-hmm. We don't know where that price is going to go. So our responsibility constitutionally is to make sure that there's affordable and just rates out there for the constituents. And if we don't have all of these varied ways of producing energy available to the ratepayer, we are doing them a disservice by forcing them into one, two, or even three. If we don't have them all, again, oil and gas, coal, hydroelectric, nuclear, yes, solar and wind, if it's not subsidized, right, not socialized, but if the utilities or other third parties want to build them, great, put them on the grid. But as long as we have it all available to the ratepayer, that's how we keep the rates low. And the biggest difference between us and our slate and the competition is they are trying to force that clean energy, you know, solar and wind conversion ahead of its requirement allowances, because that is going to, you put mandates on, it is going to drive your costs up. So I do tell, we have a lot of conservative friends that are helping us, you know, on this campaign trail.
Yes.
But I tell them to talk, and even to your listeners, you know, those independent-minded, you know, conservatives or Democrats, like my family are Democrats. I was raised in a Democrat household.
Mm-hmm. But they, you were raised in Douglas, Arizona, right?
Yeah. Yeah, all very Democratic. But all of us are affected by the cost of our budgets in our household and our companies. And if we want to make sure that we stay the 49th, and hey, I'm, you know, one of my goals and I'm going to push for is to say, how do we get to the 50th cheapest? But, you know, that's going to be a goal. I don't know how we can get there. But that's how we can help battle this inflation, is by doing this all above approach, not forcing things onto the ratepayers' backs that don't belong there, to ensure that we have all the levers and switches to be able to use in order to keep rates affordable for our companies and our homes.
Over the last few years, what has happened to rates in Arizona under this current commission?
So they do go up. And look, you know, I have no dispersions here on the cost is going up. And I have no delusions, as I say, that people are not being affected by raising rates. We are the 49th, and I say this, and I kind of wince at the analogy, but it's kind of the only one, being a big guy, the only way I can think of saying this is, yes, that we just happen to be the slowest sinking ship in the harbor. You know, rates are going up for everyone. We just don't happen to be going up as fast as everyone else, hence why we were able to stay on the 49th level. But I understand that these rates, you know, rates going up even 5%, 7% with fixed income, with low income people, with people running companies that are barely making their margins, I understand that it is hurtful. All we can do, and the way the rates are designed right now, and I am all for the evaluation, I think all of us are, everyone that's running is for the reevaluation of the way that rates cases are being presented to the commission, of trying to moderate and modestly adjust rates so that there's no 20%, 50%, and there was one that just came forward. I think they said it was about 120% raise in their rates because they had not had a rate case in over 20 years, which is not a good thing.
No.
So what we can do through our experience, through my past of running, you know, the fourth largest water district, running billion-dollar budgets, is parsing out those rate cases and ensuring that those rate cases, which are based on historical spend by these private utilities in order to recoup capital costs that they've already spent over the last few years, they come forward to the ACC saying, okay, we spent $1 billion on upgrading infrastructure, of enhancing the reliability of, you know, bringing in substations or enhancing transmission lines, building new production. They have a just and reasonable rate of return per the Constitution to recoup that cost of capital that they've spent. So that's where a lot of these rates case are based on. But what we can do for the ratepayers, ensure they're not squeezing in anything in there that really doesn't belong in their office, you know, office management bonuses, or, you know, yes, office renewal, remodeling, you know, the spend of capital for trucks, and make sure there's it's done in a timely manner. Again, these are the small idiosyncrasies of budgeting that, again, Rachel Lee and I have in our backgrounds to be able to look at these line items and say, you know, that does not belong on the back of the ratepayer.
Right.
And or, yes, this is a just and reasonable rate of return you should be receiving on X.
Renee, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll go a few more minutes. And I just, on the break, just be thinking about what else you want to do to be on the Corporation Commission. We are talking to Renee Lopez, and you are listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. I'm Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. And we are talking to candidate and former city council from Chandler, a member, Renee Lopez, and proud Wildcat. And then we also share a passion of fighting sex trafficking. So, Renee, you had my vote a long time ago, but I am confident that your background on this commission will make a huge difference because you understand how everything is connected. One of the things you brought up was water. How does that, the Corporation Commission, do they regulate? They do. They regulate water companies, do they not?
Correct.
Okay.
And the water rates. And so this is one thing that, for clarity, a lot of people do, even on the campaign trail, that are actually pretty well read in, and been very, very privileged to run across many, many people across the state that are very understanding of water and energy in their own communities. But many still do grapple with the understanding that we do not regulate or oversee rights, water rights, as into, you know, who has the privilege to use which water. That is all edicted by local, you know, and governing groundwater act and AMAs at a state level. What we oversee is the private water utilities to ensure, again, they're operating and managing in an effective manner. And they do come before us for rate increases to ensure that, again, as I mentioned before, just not like the big companies, that they're doing the right things for capital planning in the future, and or again reimbursing them for the proper, just and reasonable expenses that they have made in order to improve in water delivery for their own customers. So, yeah, and that becomes very parsing. And I do remind people, when it comes to water, there is not just a energy water, you know, kind of crossover, but in Arizona, every community, county, city, municipality has a different sources of water. So some, you know, rely on the Colorado River, some river, you know, rely on the Salt River or in the Verde Valley, some, you know, rely on well water or groundwater. So it varies location to location. And on the Corporation Commission, we do need to understand how that different people are impacted by that. And again, their needs locally for future growth and or, you know, things that they're going to need in order to keep their businesses and their family multi-generationally in their communities.
So to that point, do we have enough water in Arizona to allow future growth?
So we do, and I'm going to, again, I get, as I said, water's kind of my second passion, so I'm going to jump onto my my soapbox pedestal here and start pounding the table, because we do have enough water. Now, don't get me wrong, water is very precious in Arizona, and again, the saying goes, you know, whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting in Arizona.
Paul Gosar.
So, yep, and so that was coined by, I think, Senator Kyle back when they were doing the original Groundwater Act back in the 70s or 80s. But it's been true. I mean, that's what all of the range wars and the rancher wars were all about, was water rights. But in the end, we are very reasonable, responsible with our water. We know we're not idiots here. We know we're growing up, we're living in a desert, that we need to be responsible. So we are, by the numbers, we are using, as in crossing in the borders of Arizona and usage, we are using about the same amount of water as we used to in the 1960s, okay? But we've added almost 3 million people. I think it's 3.5 million people into the state of Arizona. We went from 1 million to 4.5 million. We've added so much industry, and we've actually have more agriculture production now than we ever did before, producing more, food, grains, and such. You know, one of the C's in Arizona, citrus, right? So, but we did this through improvements in technology, improvements in yielding in agriculture, conservation, reuse, right? We recycle. A lot of cities now recycle almost all of their water. You know, it becomes a wastewater, and they use it for, irrigation and or, other developments like we do in Chandler. A lot of the water that gets, sent to Intel is treated water. And so that's how we're able to continue to grow and still, accommodate industry. Now, don't get me wrong, we have a shortage because we're one of many that take water off the Colorado River, which is a major source of water for a lot of cities. But this is where I kind of start getting angry and passionate. California is not highest priority off the Colorado River right now. They have the highest allotment off of the Colorado River. If California were to do one tenth of the amount of savings and reuse that we do in Arizona, we would not have a water problem in the Southwest.
Right.
That Lake Mead would be overflowing because California takes 100% of their allotment and they send a lot of it straight into dead lakes
and
into the ocean without even touching it.
Right.
And they don't reuse anything.
It
bothered me no end because they don't have to per the Colorado Compact that was, established 26 years ago. Now, that is when you talk about the future. This is one of the things that is not necessarily fully in the ACC wheelhouse, but one of the things that I do want to passionately get involved with, having been on AMWA also, is educating our state legislators and our congressional delegation that we are going to be reevaluating and renegotiating that Colorado Compact in 2026. So in 2 years, we're going to have to redo that thing. Now is the time for us to start building up our sponsors and our stakeholders together to start working to basically hold California accountable for all the wasteful water that they have been,
you caught yourself. I understand. I understand. California makes me mad. I wake up in the morning, I'm already mad at California. So Renee, we were down to our last minute, and I wanted to, would you let the listeners know where they can reach you to find out more about your campaign and what you stand for and why you don't like California?
Yeah. don't get me wrong. A lot of people in California I love. I got some really good friends over there. But again, their policies are just, agitating.
Yes.
But my website is votereneelopez.com. That's vote, R-E-N-E, Lopez.com. And you can learn a little bit more of my background and, again, my priorities there. And if you wish to, wish to send me an email to correspond, it is JRLopezRep@gmail.com.
Renee, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk to you again before the election, but I just appreciate you stepping forward and serving Arizona. And thank you so much.
Thank you for all you do also. And, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
Thank you so much. Okay, so we are going to shift gears because we have an election coming up, and we are going to be joined by Jane Hubbard. Jane, welcome to Win Tucson.
Hi, good afternoon, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. And so you are working on getting volunteers so that we have observers, so that everything we complain about the elections, that people that want to get involved and have been upset about elections, what should they do?
Yes. Well, as you know, we are very concerned about election integrity and the potential of fraud. I mean, this is one of the most important elections in our lifetime, and our nation's future is really dependent on this election. It's at stake. So we need eyes on the process. So right now in Pima County, we have 126 voting centers that have been selected, and we are trying to get observers in these voting centers. We have two shifts scheduled for per center. So that's 252 shifts, 252 people that we need to be in there to have their eyes on what's going on election day as the in-person voting is going on. And it's particularly important to, ensure that all the equipment is working, they have enough ballots, they have ink, they have paper, that no one is prevented from voting. And also that the ballots are secured at the end of the day, that they're counted by two different parties, and they're secured and locked in the boxes for transport. So it's really important to have people in there to keep an eye on what's going on. So right now we have only 99 shifts filled out of the 252 shifts, which is only about 39% is filled. There's 61% is not filled yet.
Okay.
And the reasons that
I was just going to say, I want you to tell the people twice. So where can people go if they say, I want to participate, what should they do right now?
Yeah, so they need to go to their website, pimagop.org, and they will go directly to, on the homepage, there is a blue boxes and kind of in the center, as they scroll down, it says Quick Links. So in the Quick Links box, they'll click on that, sign up to be a volunteer observer, and follow the prompts until they get to the Find Your Nearest Vote Center. So you can choose a region that's near to you or a region that you're willing to serve as an observer. Our greatest need is in South Tucson, West Tucson, Green Valley, and the outlying areas, which includes Mount Lemmon and out in Sells and Ajo. So there's two shifts at each location. So you can choose a morning shift from 6 to 12:30 p.m. or 12:30 to 7 p.m. until the last voter has voted at that center. So when you find your shift that you're willing to work, and you just click on sign up, and then it has you fill in your information.
Jane?
So you'll get a...
Okay, yes, so we've got a minute and a half left, and I want to make sure. So if people want to volunteer and they want to do this, they need to go to pimagop.com.
Yes? .org.
I'm sorry, pimagop.org. And
on the homepage are the quick links.
And they'll follow the links. And you can volunteer by your house. And this is your opportunity. So many people complain that we don't have our eyes and hands on these elections. This is your opportunity to just volunteer one day, election day, by your house, by close to you. We need people all over Pima County. So, okay, so 30 seconds. What else do you want people to know? 30 seconds.
All right. Well, I just want to say we're very grateful for those who do sign up and those who are willing to step up. And if they have any questions, they should call our Pima County Republican Party headquarters at 520-321-1492. But again, go to pimagop.org and to the homepage where you can sign up.
Jane, thank you so much. And we'll update me so we can update everybody else. This has been Win Tucson on Wednesday. This is where you come to find out everything that's going on. We'll be back tomorrow with more exciting news. And just go out and make it a great day. I am.